cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Backtracks Theme Music. My name is Corey Morse, joined, as always, by the always pleasant, always happy John Mariano. John, how's it going?
I'm terrific. I had a fantastic dinner, and then you hit me up to record some episodes, and here we are.
Why not? Got some time to kill. It's a holiday here in Saskatchewan. It's Saskatchewan Day. So we all had the day off, did some home renovations, and I thought, what better way to cap off Saskatchewan Day than get John on the horn and let's talk about some more movie music.
So isn't it a little self-serving to have a Saskatchewan Day in Saskatchewan? Shouldn't those of us outside of Saskatchewan Day celebrate Saskatchewan?
You really should, but you haven't in many, many years. So we had to kind of do it for you. This has actually just always been kind of a stat holiday because we need a stat holiday every month. And I guess they couldn't think of a reason to have one in August. So they just called it Saskatchewan Day.
Well, that's fair.
Because the way it works, you want to have one statutory holiday every single month. Some months have two, like July has Canada Day and stuff like that. So today is Saskatchewan Day. And it's like we go around wearing green or eating wheat or, doing anything overly Saskatchewanian. But it's just a day to hang out with family.
Meanwhile, here we are in August in the States, and I don't believe we have a national holiday this month.
You don't have, you should have a New York Day.
Oh, I don't want to celebrate New York.
Oh, okay. How about the? It's fine. It is what it is. John, we had a lot of fun last week, didn't we? Do you remember what song we covered?
No, because I don't remember what day it is.
Well, technically, it's Monday.
Oh, yeah. But I guess the listeners don't know that because we drop them on different days.
Yeah, but I think last time we did a Led Zeppelin song. I think you're familiar with that band. Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah.
We did Fast Times.
Yes. And had a lot of fun talking about one of the greatest heavy rock bands of all time. I wanted to continue that trend here today and talk about one of my favorite all-time heavy rock bands. Of course, the people listening to this already know the band and know the song. John doesn't know as of yet, but I've loved this band since I discovered him in the 80s. They had a great album in 1984 called Smell the Glove. And I've just been obsessed with Spinal Tap ever since. Easily one of England's loudest bands. I think right up there with Led Zeppelin. Are you familiar at all with Spinal Tap?
I am. They're actually, it's like, to me, we had the Beatles, we had the Beach Boys, and like really early on, we did have Spinal Tap. Right? Like, mm-hmm. People forget that they were of that era and then graduated in the 70s to that heavier, more Zeppelin-esque, phase. Yeah. So, they really made the move where I felt like the Beatles kind of end as the 70s begin. Right, they actually transitioned kind of like the Stones sort of did, but the Stones, I don't know, have always been their own animal to me, where they never really fit in a time or place. Right, like the Beatles are very much of their moment, the Beach Boys are very much of their moment, Zeppelin and Floyd and Sabbath are very much of their moment, and Spinal Tap kind of transcends the moment.
That's very well put. They had a lot of early name changes, I think, which maybe confused some people too. They started off, of course, as the Regulars, the Originals. And then there was already a band called the Originals, so they called themselves the New Originals. And then the Originals changed their name back to the Regulators. So they could have, the New Originals could have went back to the Originals, but they said, fuck it at that point, and they became the Thamesmen. And at that point released a pretty average selling single called Give Me Some Money, which I think really kind of put them on the map. But it wasn't until the name changed to Spinal Tap and the big hit, of course, Listen to the Flower People in the late 60s, where they became kind of a psychedelic pop band that really kind of put Spinal Tap on the map. And then, like you alluded to, they kind of transcended that. They've been known as a progressive rock group, a jazz fusion group, a funk group, a reggae group. They kind of check all the boxes. And then finally, in the early 80s, became kind of a heavy metal band. And that's kind of where I wanted to focus on here today. And, of course, the Hatchet Job documentary that came out in the 80s from Marty DeBerge called This is Spinal Tap, which really, really painted the band in a bad light. And that always kind of, as a Spinal Tap fan, that kind of didn't stick with me very well. John, what were your thoughts on the documentary This is Spinal Tap?
You know, what was his name? Marty DeBerg?
Marty DeBerge, yep.
Yeah, Marty DeBerge. I feel like he gets a bad rap. He was in the right place at the right time with the right band. All he did was capture what was going on. Would they exploit it? Maybe a little bit, but they did sign their rights over. It's no different. Like, I just watched Some Kind of a Monster Metallica documentary, mm-hmm. right? The band still has to okay the thing coming out. Marty DeBerge isn't you know, just running rampant and going, hey, you know, here's you in your worst light. It's like they signed up for a doc, and then whatever ensues.
Well, and you can maybe fault their management on that, because I don't think they had final cut, but you got to admit the cut is pretty slanted. Like, by all accounts, they found their way to the stage a good 70% of the time, but they're going to show one of those 30% where they didn't. Or, you know, it was only like maybe 5 or 6 shows where they were billed below a puppet show, but you got to show that, right? Or, you know, not getting out of the pod. They got out of the pod almost 50% of the time.
Corey, I know of the two of us, like, you're the big Spinal Tap fanboy. Like, if you know, you were of the right era, you'd be what they called a Band-Aid. We get it.
Sure.
I'm not a Spinal Tap defender. I'm a fan, but not a defender. Not making the stage 30% of the time. This isn't baseball where, like, succeeding 30% of the time is like a good thing. Failing 30% of the time to show up for contracted dates is actually pretty terrible.
They were there for the date. They just couldn't find the stage. And that happens more than you think. Talk to Jimmy Page and kind of his worst moments. I bet you Zeppelin couldn't find the stage some of the time. You're asking too much of a band as heavily medicated as Spinal Tap were.
I'm sure Jimmy Page doesn't remember 80% of the time, the 30% of the time he couldn't find the stage.
All I'm saying is they could have showed the band in a better light. Now, the reason I wanted to bring up Spinal Tap here tonight is because Spinal Tap is working on what I assume is a farewell performance that is going to be chronicled again in another documentary. And they must have buried the hatchet with Marty DeBerge, because from what I understand, he's back directing this new documentary. So that'll be out probably in the next year.
Well, I am looking forward to seeing what the band's been up to the last 30 years.
As am I. You know, they had a couple of comebacks in the early 90s. They released an album called Break Like the Wind, and they did kind of a nice little tour based on that. Since Break Like the Wind, you know, they appeared at Live 8 and a bunch of other places. Glastonbury in 2009. They performed on Jimmy Fallon just in 2009. So as early as 2009, the band has still been active. They've been gone for a while now. I know they all had their kind of side projects. You know, Derek Smalls very famously was in a Christian heavy metal group called Lamb's Blood, which played the Monsters of Jesus Festival, and they did a fantastic job on that. So I'm not sure what he's been up to since then, though. So like you, I'm very much looking forward to that. Hopefully we're going to get some new Spinal Tap music. How great would that be?
I think we're long overdue. I feel like they're one of those bands. It's kind of like when Prince passed and you found out he had that whole catalog of music in that vault somewhere.
Right.
I feel like Spinal Tap's got to have something like that going on.
They really do. And, you know, these guys aren't getting any younger. And you look at the list of members that have been in this band, you know, upwards of 40 people that have come in and out of Spinal Tap. There's easily been, you know, 20 drummers alone. I think right now Greg Bissonette is actually playing drums with Spinal Tap. He's also in Ringo Starr and his All-Star Band, formerly of the David Lee Roth Band, the Joe Satriani Band, Electric Light Orchestra, Toto. Let's all say a little prayer for Greg Bissonette, and hopefully he survives to make it to the end of the documentary.
Oh, I'm looking something up here. I don't know how much TV you watch, but David St. Hughes, I just found out what he's been doing lately.
David St. Hubbins?
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. David St. Hubbins. Sometimes I get my names crossed.
You're close.
So you know what he's been up to?
What's that?
he's been on that show, Better Call Saul.
And who does he play on Better Call? That wasn't Howard Hamlin, was it?
No. He was Saul's brother.
Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck. He was Chuck.
Well, I wouldn't have known. You know, give him a haircut and an American accent, and he really disappeared in the role. I thought he did a pretty good job on that show. I know you're not a fan of the Chuck character, though, on that show.
No, I wasn't a fan of the Chuck character, but realizing that was him, he really went full method on picking up like stateside accents and everything. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize he had that in his wheelhouse.
No, well, he's a very talented guy. You know, for the longest time, him and Janine settled in California, where she opened her clothing store, which I believe is still open. It's called Potato Republic, and it specializes in itchy Irish clothing. So hopefully that's going well for them too.
Yeah. It was for a while there, they were really specializing in burlap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anything Irish and anything itchy, pretty much you get a Potato Republic. But what do you say, John? Let's get back to the music. And when you're talking about Spinal Tap, you're talking about the amazing live shows. Of course, the big skull prop, you know, before Iron Maiden brought that out, I'm pretty sure Spinal Tap innovated that. Known for their live shows, but really when you're talking about Spinal Tap and you're talking live show, you're talking about the standout production piece of any tour for Spinal Tap, and that's Stonehenge. John, when was the first time that you saw Spinal Tap perform Stonehenge?
The documentary. I could never get a ticket to one of their shows, dude. Like, that was back in the day where you'd have to wake up at like 2 a.m. and go wait online in front of like a Sam Goody or some kind of record store and wait for the Ticketmaster kiosk to open or whatever your ticket vendor was up in Canada. Yep. And then just sit there and wait and then hope that there were tickets left by the time your spot in line came up.
I hear you. I know Spinal Tap only played Canada once, but it was pretty historic. It was in 1992 on July 1st. Spinal Tap actually crossed 5 time zones for 3 performances in St. John's, Newfoundland, Barrie, Ontario, and Vancouver, British Columbia. July 1st, of course, is Canada Day. So they hit all 3 of those on Canada Day as part of the Molson's Great Canadian Party. And for that performance, actually, for each of those performances, Stonehenge, the miniature monument prop is delivered on stage in a courier envelope. So a different way of presenting the Stonehenge monument every single time they went on tour. I really admired that about the band.
What I admire is, from what I understand, they're the loudest show out there. Like, I've been to a Pantera show.
Right.
And even Pantera fans in the crowd were going, I'm like, is this the loudest it's ever been for you? And there were a few of them there who had the opportunity to see Spinal Tap and like, no, like Spinal Tap in 84 was, they were playing, the Roxy here. Mm-hmm. And they blew the they actually shattered some of the walls. They cracked some of the foundation of the building with the sound. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You hear those kind of stories all over the place when it came to the Spinal Tap. Really known for their loudness and their punctuality. Whenever they could find the stage, they were there like right on time. They were the anti Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, it's always something I give bands credit for. Like if I'm sitting there and I'm reviewing a band at a concert, I check my time most of the time to see if they have taken the stage on time. Because if you mm-hmm. say you're going to be someplace, you should be there.
Yeah, exactly. If it says Spinal Tap's hitting the stage at 8, you better be hitting the stage at 8. And good on them. So let's go back to 1984. This is from the soundtrack of the documentary. This is Spinal Tap. What do you say, John? Let's spin a little Stonehenge.
Go for it.
Hundreds of years before the dawn of history lived a strange race of people, the Druids.
Now, what do you think about getting this history lesson right off the hop? I really kind of like this because I didn't know much about the Druids or Stonehenge. So I really appreciate Nigel kind of giving us this little history lesson.
It's also very, very reminiscent of Jim Steinman's work with Meatloaf, like having this atmospheric. You could tell that they were inspired by Spinal Tap, because having this atmospheric setup to a song, and really turning the song into a true performance. You know, I know. Also, maybe folks like Alice Cooper were inspired by this. Like, I'm just trying to think of bands off the top of my head. I feel like Ozzy and the Tap might have been around the same time, trying the same kind of things, experimenting. Mm-hmm. But a lot, like, they were like the grandfathers of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. And I mentioned a history lesson, which is great until we get to the second verse, when it turns out nobody really knows who they were or what they were doing.
No one knows who they were or what they were doing, but their legacy remains hewn into the living rock.
You got a great drum roll coming in there, and I believe that was Mick Shrimpton on the recording of Stonehenge, on the soundtrack anyway. When you're going through the laundry list of drummers for Spinal Tap, I hope you got an extra half an hour here, because you know, so many. John Stumpy Peeps, Eric Stumpy Joe, Peter James Bond, Mick Shrimpton, of course, exploded famously on stage. Joe Mama Besser, Richard Rick Shrimpton, Mick's brother, sold his dialysis machine for drugs and he's presumed dead. Sammy Stumpy Bateman died trying to jump over a tank full of sharks while on a tricycle in a freak show. Scott Skippy Scuffleton, Chris Papa Cadeau, who was eaten by his own pet python, Cleopatra. Plus nine other drummers at various times between 1970 and 1981, all dead. Really a short, and I know guys like Mick Fleetwood, John, have come out and said they really want to play for Spinal Tap. Why would anyone want to play for this band? The drummers have a very short shelf life.
So, you know, there are certain families, at least here in the States, that are military families, and they actually, it's like Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump. They justify their existence by dying in war. It's like a true badge of honor. And for many drummers, it's a very similar thing. And the closest you could do to dying in the line of duty in drumming is joining Spinal Tap and seeing what happens.
Interesting. I like that. Stonehenge, where the demons dwell, where the banshees live and they do live well. Stonehenge, where the man to man and the children dance to the pipes of Pan. Now, David St. Hubbins, as a vocalist and as a lyricist, I think very underrated. You know, such a great, truly wonderful crafted chorus here. Stonehenge, where the demons dwell, where the banshees live and they do live well. Stonehenge, where a man's a man and the children dance to the pipes of Pan. Fantastic. Just great color to this wonderful melody we got going on in this great subject matter.
You know, it's at a time when the keyboard was becoming more and more prominent an instrument, and they had the balls to really put it out there front and center, right? Like there isn't a lot of thrashing guitar in this. This is super keyboard heavy, and they're not ashamed of it. And I really appreciate what they're going for here.
And you know, a real influence on Bon Jovi. Who, of course, 87 was their big record, Slippery When Wet, and their own, they really added a lot of keyboards to their sound right around this time. You think of songs, early Bon Jovi songs like Runaway and stuff, I think directly inspired by the keyboard playing here from Spinal Tap.
What year was the song again?
Well, it came out on the soundtrack in 84. It was actually on an album previous to that. I can't remember if it was Shark Sandwich or...
So this is previous to 84 that this comes out.
Yes.
Because I hate to say it, because he's such a pioneer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, gets so much credit. But you know what album came out in 1984? Van Halen, 1984.
It did, yes.
And Jump was a really big hit that year.
It was, and very keyboard heavy. I know both Van Halen brothers were big in a Spinal Tap. And forgive me, I don't remember what original album this came on, but you know, it could have been Brain Hammer, it could have been Nerve Damage, Blood to Let, Intravenous to Milo, The Sun Never Sweats, Bent for the Rent, Tap Dancing, Rock and Roll Creation, or Shark Sandwich, all preceded Smell the Glove in 82. So it's a very good chance that this song inspired Eddie Van Halen to add more keyboards to Van Halen sound.
Which is crazy, because the only person I've ever really thought about inspiring Eddie Van Halen, other than like his own personal collection, is Brian May.
Mm-hmm.
So to think that Spinal Tap could have that kind of impact to get Eddie to pivot from guitar to keyboard is pretty radical, dude.
All right, so of course we had a little interlude there by Nigel Tufnel on vocals there. Sounding fan, he's a great background singer. When he takes the lead on lines like "Where the Dewdrop Cries" and "The Cat's Meow," "I Will Take You There," "I Will Show You How," really, really kind of shows that nice tonal quality in his voice. And we segue from that to Derek Smalls screaming like a demon, that tortured before we kind of segue into the bridge. Incredibly well done.
How many children of Stonehenge?
How many?
Yeah, well, he said that how many children, the little children of Stonehenge.
Yeah, he just said the little children of Stonehenge.
I thought he said the 11 children of Stonehenge.
Oh.
Which would have been a nice reference to Nigel's amplifier.
That's right. Nigel Tufnel famously had his amps all manufactured to go to 11 so that it would be one louder. And you talk about that structural damage at the venues that happened, not just at the Roxy, but at other places. Well, there you have it. Spinal Tap's apps all went to 11.
For fear that daybreak might come too soon.
Gonna get some mandolin now.
One show, it's in the documentary. Like, do you remember the one show where Stonehenge is like a foot tall or whatever it is?
Yeah, 18 inches, if I remember correctly. Yes.
Yeah, it's hysterical. Like the little mandolin playing here makes me think about it, because the big grand song gets so small here, and it's kind of fitting that the set was so small.
Well, and again, is that a moment that had to be shown in the documentary? Because Nigel, when he's just describing to the set designer what he was wanting for, he accidentally put inches instead of feet. It was supposed to be this big grand thing. And what they ended up with, a Stonehenge monument that was in danger of being crushed by a dwarf.
Listen, I am a fan of when things go slightly wrong. Once a year, I watch a little movie called March of the Wooden Soldiers, starring Laurel and Hardy. And every year, Laurel makes the same mistake where Santa Claus orders like 100 six-inch soldiers or whatever it is, and he gets like 100 six-foot soldiers because he marks it off wrong. And it's kind of hysterical. I like when happy accidents like this sort of size proportion happen. So whether it's a Stonehenge that's a foot and a half tall or a toy soldier that's 6 feet tall, it brings me a lot of happiness to see this kind of mistake.
Well, it's the kind of thing that the band has carried forward. I know in 92, they did a live show at the Royal Albert Hall that they filmed. And the Stonehenge monument was so big that they couldn't even get it through the door. So they didn't even measure it to see if it actually fit in the venue. So it just kind of it got wedged in the door, actually, and the people were trapped. It was a real issue with fire code and stuff. And then, as I mentioned in the on the Molson show, July 1st in 92, they had a monument so small it fit into a courier's envelope. So curious to see if they do Stonehenge coming up in 2022, 23, what they're going to do to present that on stage.
I just wanted to perform on actual Stonehenge at some point.
Wouldn't that be great? Yeah, that's a great idea. That should be like their final performance, shouldn't it?
I mean, it sounds like you want to kill off the band.
Well, I mean, eventually they will die off. Like, if it's not now, when? Like, might as well do it right away, right?
I'm pretty sure that they're going to freeze some body parts like Walt Disney, and they plan to live forever.
All I'm saying is perform Stonehenge at Stonehenge and then ritualistic suicide. What a way to go out. Nobody else has done it.
Very dark, Corey.
So we went from very dark to the happiest little mandolin tune you're ever going to hear. I just feel like, you know, putting on my little green tights and hopping around like the little guy on stage did during the performance in the documentary.
We there's songs like Stairway to Heaven, there's songs even like Master of Puppets that will play with the pacing and the volume and the density of a song, and nobody does it better than Spinal Tap. Like we're full on like a minstrel right now. Mm-hmm. in the middle of this atmospheric prog rock song, right?
Yep. That's Stonehenge from the 1984 soundtrack to the documentary called This Is Spinal Tap by the band Spinal Tap. John, I just want to ask you about those last lines. They always confused me because Nigel sings, "And where are they now, the little people of Stonehenge? And what would they say to us if we were here tonight?" But they are here tonight. They're the ones performing. So when they mean here, are they saying Stonehenge or are they saying at the venue they're performing it at?
So. Are you confused by the little people of Stonehenge? Because those are actors that they hired.
No, I know. Yeah, no, that part I got. It took me a while, but I got it. I'm asking about the if we were here tonight line, because they are here tonight. They're singing.
Oh, no. They wrote these lyrics. I know for a fact. The lyrics are written for the nights when they can't find the stage.
Oh, okay. So they play this like... Did they kind of do like what happened? Was it I think it was a Quiet Riot performance where the bass player, or it was Tracy Guns, LA Guns actually, actually performed in the bathroom because he had performance anxiety. So they just, you know, mic'd him up from the bathroom and he performed like that. Something similar, maybe Spinal Tap was backstage somewhere and just ran a line out to the PA and played even though they couldn't find the stage?
No. They sing it ironically.
Oh.
Yeah. Derek Smalls once said in an interview.
Because I didn't think this was a band that was big on irony. Because there's really such a fine line between clever and stupid. And I always thought that maybe they just accidentally crossed that line at that moment. But John, your final thoughts on Stonehenge, a wonderful piece of music from a wonderful, wonderful British band who will hopefully be going out on top here as they record their final performance.
I mean, I think it's a fine song. I don't think it's their best song. I don't think it's their worst song. I think it's a lot better to watch live, especially with the antics of the set piece.
Mm-hmm.
But for my money, they have better songs in their catalog.
Well, I don't disagree. I think I went more iconic for the first one we do from This Is Spinal Tap. But there's one about a large rear-ended ladies that I think we're going to have to cover at some point, because I think that could be their best song. But John, anything else you'd like to say or tell the folks about before we let them go here tonight?
I just want to point out that's another genre that Spinal Tap starts, yes, that Queen then follows, and famously in the 90s, Sir Mix-a-Lot and Rex in Effect also capitalized on.
Yes. Especially Sir Mix-a-Lot. I remember when he was knighted by the Queen and giving his title of Sir shortly before that song came out. But yeah, he wrote that and took that genre to new heights.
And for you folks who might not remember a little band called Rex in Effect, their most popular hit of the 90s was called Rump Shaker. So they equally belong in this genre.
There you go. We will be covering Big Bottom at some point. John, where can the folks find you online?
Oh, you can find me at John Marione, NY John Marione, or Marione, or whatever Corey likes to call me. But you can find me there on Twitter. And you can find me doing a little show called Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. And you could find me listening to podcasts of Ken Knapsack and listening to the podcast of Corey Morissette and Mark Kammeyer.
Hey, I know that show. Podcast. Yeah, we have a very tiny podcast that features a Spinal Tap disciple, Eddie Van Halen, called And the Podcast Will Rock. I'm also part of the Aerosmith Show with John Marione. You can find me online at CD Marione on Twitter, and catch us on Twitter here at BT Theme Music. Give us some ideas maybe of some movies or some songs you'd like us to kind of yak about. Next week is a John pick, and I'm very much looking forward to that. John, can you give us a little hint, a little tease maybe, of which way you're leaning for next week's song?
Bees.
You heard it. We're going to get something from Bee Movie. I can't wait for that because I don't remember the soundtrack from that one. So on behalf of John Mariano, my name is Corey Morissette. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you next time on Backtracks Theme Music.
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of 11, these and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.